Hi, everyone, and welcome to Upgrading to Microsoft SQL Server 2014. Today, I'll be talking with my colleague, John Martin, about how to upgrade your SQL Server 2005, 2008, or 2008 R2 to a more recent version of SQL Server. We'll be doing this in three modules. We'll start by talking about how to plan for your upgrade and some of the processes and tools available to you. And then we'll move into sizing and scaling your upgraded environment. Finally, John will tell us how to actually perform your upgrade and validate it. My name is Debbie Lyons, and I'm a Senior Product Marketing Manager with the SQL Server team. And I focus on enabling our small and medium business customers. I also work on Microsoft Azure and the upgrade and update scenarios. And with me, I have John Martin from our Premier Field Engineer team. And he's going to be telling you all about all the steps to get to SQL Server 2014.
Thank you very much, Debbie. Yeah, I'm John Martin. I'm a Premier Field Engineer specializing in SQL Server based in the UK. Main areas that I work with are SQL Server infrastructure, focusing primarily on the HADR side of things. Also looking into upgrades, migrations. I'm doing a lot of work in that area at the moment. Been in the IT industry for over 10 years now, specializing with SQL Server for most of it now, covering things like speaking with customers, educating them, helping them, and becoming a trusted advisor to help them get through with understanding the product, where it's going, and just generally what we can do to help them out. So also presenting in the community an awful lot as well. So getting out there and making sure that people understand what SQL Server is and how best going to use it.
Well, great, John. We really appreciate the expertise that you're bringing in, especially all the field experience that you've had actually performing upgrades.
Okay, thank you very much. So as Debbie said, we've got three main modules that we're going to be covering today. We're going to be looking at the sort of upgrade planning, the process, and some of the free tools that we have available as Microsoft. And then we're looking at the actual planning of the upgraded environment, how you're going to go about understanding the data you've captured, what data you've captured, and how that's going to sort of influence the way that you move forwards. And then finally, we're going to look at the validation of the actual upgrade itself, the upgrade, and then some considerations that you might have once you've gone live with the new product as well. So, quite a lot to cover, but let's get on with it. So, main audience that we're looking at this one, we're looking really at sort of SQL Server DBAs, developers, and people that are going to be involved in understanding where we're going with the product, understanding what the new features are and how they're going to make use of them. Okay. Ideally, it'd be really useful to understand some of the SQL Server 2014 features, and there's just some great content here on MVA already about that side of things. So understanding what SQL Server 2014 is and can bring to you and the reasons you'll really want to look at upgrading for it. Okay.
Right, and I'd like to make a plug also for the availability of a free SQL Server evaluation copy that you can download from Microsoft.com. Really a great way to play around with the tool and get some ideas about the features you'd like to take advantage of.
Okay, so we shall start. We're looking at our first module here. We're going to be looking at sort of upgrade planning, process, and tools. The main elements of this module we're going to be looking into are identifying the key business requirements, because without business requirements, there's no real justification for an upgrade there. There's some elements around the supportability and such like from Microsoft that we'll cover as well. Then we'll look at the migration process steps, and then we'll cover some of the free tooling. So, identifying business requirements. This is, in my experience, one of the most key elements. Historically, migrations have been relatively simple. But moving forwards, systems are getting more and more complex. In this day and age, you're talking about bigger databases, more databases. We're talking about more complex application tiers as well that are sitting above these systems, so hundreds of web servers potentially talking into a SQL Server system. So understanding what the requirements are for the business has for keeping them up and keeping the general system availability during the migration phase, and what new features they want to understand and make use of. So. Why upgrade? This is going to be a really interesting one. Supportability. The big headline one here is that April 2016 support for SQL Server 2005 is going to end. So once you're beyond that, it's an unsupported platform. So looking at things like compliance areas, so things like PCI DSS, the requirement to be on a supported platform, very, very important for a lot of businesses in this day and age. So that's going to be, I think, one of the main drivers for people to come off of 2005. Additionally, the fantastic features that we have in the new product, 2012 introduced availability groups, 2014 enhanced that, brought in the in-memory OLTP engine. We've got column store that's gone through 2012 and been enhanced again in 2014 to give us cluster column store. So there's some fantastic features there that sit and can really enhance the application tier that you're looking at making use of in this day and age. And then we've got some of the changes that have happened between 2008 and 2012 in the memory architecture, and 2014 introducing its brand new cardinality estimator to really sort of help drive improvement in query performance and standardization of the way that the engine's actually going to be taking what you give it and returning the results to you as quickly as it can. Additionally, from a supportability perspective, 2008 and 2008 R2 have entered or will be entering, have entered extended support period. So that's where things like fixes are not going to be supplied, so KB fixes, but security fixes will be. So it's a reduced level of support. So that's something that's going to be key.
So John, are there also some benefits that our administrators mm-hmm. can get from upgrading their infrastructure at the same time mm-hmm. if they're on an older version of Windows Server, say 2003?
Yeah, I mean, 2003 obviously is going end of life very, very soon as well. But if you look at Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2, we've made some massive enhancements to the underlying platform. Things like storage spaces are very, very, they're really useful if you've got lots of locally attached storage and you want to use the software tier for giving you that resiliency within the application for when it comes to your storage. Additionally, the enhancements that have come in with failover clustering, which really underpins availability groups and everything that they can provide for you, the dynamic quorum and the dynamic witness capability of 2012 R2, really means that you've got that capability to go from a very high-end large cluster and in the worst circumstances fail back to a single node to keep your business really working.
Mm-hmm. And also maybe if you're upgrading your hardware, it might be a great mm-hmm. time to look at Microsoft Azure Virtual Machines as mm-hmm. a way to reduce your CapEx and your OpEx when you're hosting your SQL Server.
Exactly, and that's what I see a number of customers doing at the moment. They're seriously evaluating the Microsoft Azure IaaS platform. We've got gallery images, so you don't even have to bring your own licenses. There's licenses included up there as well, and that's a sort of, it's very, very interesting for people in this day and age. Just the fact that they haven't got that huge CapEx expenditure of large servers, the fact that you can start small and grow in the business, that's something that's going to offset an awful lot of people expenditure. So,
for sure.
So again, scalability perspective when it comes to upgrading. 2014 standard edition, now this is a big jump. It used to be 64 gigabytes of addressable memory. Now we're talking 128 gigs of RAM that it can address. That's a big, big upgrade. More partitioned in partition tables, increased amount of compute, so more cores when you go to the core enterprise licensing model. And more complex and more reliable configurations. Windows Server 2003 and SQL Server 2005 clusters, they were somewhat complex to configure and set up. Windows Server 2012 R2 and SQL Server 2014 license for failover cluster instances and for availability groups, it's very, very easy to get a very resilient, highly available, disaster recovery resistant platform built in place. And really sort of touching on here, deprecated features. As we introduce new features, we look to take old features out, things that people aren't using now, where once we had something that did the job, we've now come up with something better. So in the case of things like mirroring, we're now moving towards availability groups, which gives us more replicas, readable replicas, and things that people have been asking for a long time. So we've increased that capability in the platform.
So where are we sending people for documentation on this? Is it the SQL Server Books Online on the MSDN website?
Yeah, we've got fantastic documentation up on the Books Online on the MSDN websites. A lot of people know about the deprecated features pages that we have. Not so many people understand that we've also got documentation up there about breaking changes, removed features as well, and actually changes in behavior. In 2012 and 2014, there have been some changes in the CLR behavior, and all of that is documented as well. So it's something that you can do your research on, and you can find out and see if it's going to be applicable to you before you make that change. So doing your research is going to be key, and we've got some fantastic documentation in that space.
Great.
Okay. So now we've covered sort of the scale, what the reason for upgrading, the scalability and what have you. Now we look at the migration process step. Oops. Now we start by covering the upgrade paths. Now this is going to be a key thing to understand. Now I've included 2000 on this slide because there is still some of it out there despite it being out of support. So what people want to do is they want to come up to the latest version. They want to come up to either SQL Server 2012 or SQL Server 2014.
I noticed that you have service packs
Noted
on this. Do you also need to be on the latest service pack before you make your upgrade?
There is a specific matrix for which service packs you need to have available to you. If you're going up to 2012, as we look here, you can't go from 2000 SP4 up to SQL Server 2012. What you can do, however, is go through SQL Server 2005 SP4. Now, SP4 is the upgrade path from 2000 version to 2012. And again, 2008, it's Service Pack 2 up to SQL Server 2012. 2008 R2, we're looking at Service Pack 1 as a minimum to go up to SQL Server 2012. Now, when we bring SQL Server 2014 into the mix, what we can see here is, again, as there was with 2012, there is no direct migration path from 2000. However, SQL Server 2005 Service Pack 4 to 2014 directly is a supported migration path. So, with people who've got these legacy systems in place at the moment, the ones that are sort of to the back end of the supportability matrix, there is an easier migration path. You may not want to upgrade in place, so you want to refresh your hardware platform as well. And in that case, you can do the backup, you can do the restore, you can do the attach and detach mechanism, that type of thing. And then, as you can see here, the difference between the 2012 and the 2008 and 2014 is that it's Service Pack 3 and Service Pack 2 for 2008 and 2008 R2 respectively here. So it is a higher service pack level in order to come up to SQL Server 2014 as the supported migration path. And of course, you can upgrade from SQL Server 2012 Service Pack 1 up to SQL Server 2014, which you're seeing actually quite a lot of people doing as well now. They're making that jump. They're using 2012 as the intermediary before they're coming up to the SQL Server 2014.
Great.
So now we look at covering the process. Historically, it used to be just a simple backup and restore. I need to take the database from my old system. I need to put it on my new system. As I said earlier, we're looking at systems being far more complex now. There's a lot more things move. There's a lot more moving parts that need to be taken into account for this one. So some of the other things as well you need to look at, because the systems are more complex and you're looking at large web farms, you're looking at potentially large finance systems, or things like the Dynamics platform where you've got a number of application servers, reporting elements, you've got other areas as well, so you've got analysis services and cubes all tied into it. There's a lot of things that are dependent on the actual underlying data platform. Now, what that means is that you have to look at expanding that scope. You have to look at understanding that you're going to be talking to other areas of the business. You're going to be talking to other areas of your team, whereas something that you used to be able to do internally, it used to be something that the DBA could just work through individually. Moving the data between the systems and upgrading them pretty seamlessly in the background, it's not always the case in this day and age. Yeah, there's going to be some systems like that out there, but more often than not, it's going to require talking to the finance department, the infrastructure department, sales department, understanding what their requirements are, which software packages are they doing, especially when you look at people now wanting to move up to the cloud as well, up into Microsoft Azure. What options are there? Do you want to move your databases into that? Are you going to move your apps here? Are you going to have a hybrid approach? So understanding where the strategic direction of the business is going, that's very, very important.
Yeah, it sounds like engaging the business owner up front would be a great way to help make your case for the upgrade as well.
Like exactly.
Looking at the upgraded features and the better performance, just really getting them involved up front could help you make the case for doing this upgrade.
Exactly, and anything, especially in finance departments, when you tell them it's going to make their compliance a lot easier to get past, they're going to buy into it. So, I mean, one of the key things really to take away here, and it's the final point on this slide, is that you really need to look at treating it as a project. That's something that I've found in my personal experience to be key. I have seen when things go bad, and it's not pretty. having to work very, very long hours to bring a system back online and roll back, and then understanding what went wrong and why, and it comes down to the fact that didn't have the business helping you out. Mm-hmm. That can cause a problem. Yep. So, as I said, overall process, we want to understand the whole system. More complex systems, you need to know which client, things like which client libraries are being used. So if you're going up to SQL Server 2014 and you're looking to plan using availability groups, you need to make sure you're using one of the latest client drivers in order to really sort of leverage the capability that comes with them with regards to the multi-subnet capability for having a disaster recovery environment over two data centers, or if you want to make use of readable replicas. What you want to do there is make sure you've got the ability to set up the read-only routing and then have those reads offloaded onto the secondary side of things. Makes life a lot easier. And identifying and working with the business owners. Now, it could be the CIO, it could be the financial director, but they're going to have people that are responsible for the applications that their department use. Now, that's one of the areas that we need to really look at. You identify these people. These are the ones that can make your life a whole lot easier. They know their application, they know how it performs, they know what it should be doing and what it should not be doing. By including those people in things and understanding that they can help you when it comes to the testing phase, that's going to be key. Get them to sign off it, you're going to be really happy. It's going to be something that's going to be working forwards with it. It's having them sign off really sort of covers you as well. If they say it's fine, then that's not a problem. It's not something that the IT department did. And communication is key. Now, this is a huge, huge thing. Communicate with the affected people. Don't blanket go to the business. We've all been in the situation where you've moved something in the background and then the next thing that goes wrong anywhere in the system, oh no, it's because you did the migration. Understand the scope of your communications. Only bring in the people that are going to be affected by it, the ones that are really sort of are going to be sort of bought into the whole process. It'll make your life a whole lot easier. So looking at the methods that we have available to us here, we're looking at side-by-side migrations or in-place upgrades. Now, if you're coming from some of the older systems, you're probably going to want to look at going side-by-side. Now, this is something that's going to have this methodology is going to have a direct impact on the amount of downtime that you have within the system, how long the business can be without a platform whilst you go through that upgrade phase. Side-by-side gives you a lot more capability with regards to being able to spin up a system alongside and do a lot more in-depth testing. You can do a lot more benchmarking. You can really understand what that system is going to be capable of doing when it goes live. Now, in-place upgrade means you're going to be using the same hardware. Now, if you're coming from 2005, unless you've done a recent install on brand new hardware, there's not going to be much point there. You want to make sure that you've got the latest hardware and the latest operating systems. As I say, an in-place upgrade, you're upgrading the bits that are installed on that machine. Now, if you're using 2003, that's not a viable option for 14. What you need to do is you probably then have to look at rebuilding the operating system as well as SQL Server. So that adds complexity and potential risk into the process. Side-by-side is a big risk mitigation process.
So if you have to do both an infrastructure upgrade and get your operating system up to speed, you will probably have to do a side-by-side, it sounds like?
Yeah, in my experience, that's probably the best way to go about it. It just gives you that versatility, and there's less pressure involved, because if you've only got a four-hour window to do the upgrade, what you're looking at there is having to do an operating system upgrade and a software upgrade and all the validation that's required. So it can put a lot of pressure onto you. So by taking that away, it makes your life a lot easier there. And really sort of just to understand upgrading SQL Server, it requires effort. It's not something the DBA can do as a background task. You need to dedicate resources to it. The DBA is going to need the support. He's going to need the support of the network team, your infrastructure team, your storage teams. It's not something that you can just knock a SQL Server up in the background and then just move them over. So, I mean, one of the things that I was involved with the migration, we had over 200 clients all connecting through local connection strings. So I had to interface with the help desk team, get them to go out and change these ahead of time. So understanding the overall process there is going to make life a lot easier. So what work can you do up front compared to what you're going to do on the day?
Right.
So we start the main element of the process. I mean, if we look at the process that we want to understand here, we're looking at starting off with our scoping. Understanding the scope is vital. once you've understood, once you've put a scope in place, start doing some initial analysis on that. What are we likely to run into that's going to cause us some problems? Have we captured all of the machines that we need that are part of this system? So, for example, if you've got a replication topology, what have you got downstream? That's going to make life very, very interesting, understanding that. After you've done your initial analysis, you move on to your planning phase. Now, the information you gather from the initial analysis could be that you understand you've got a large footprint of deprecated feature usage, which means you need to sort of engage the development department, understand how much effort that's going to be. So you need to upgrade the application as well as the underlying SQL Server infrastructure. Understanding that's going to be key, and working that in at an early stage to your plan is going to be very, very important. And then once you've got the plan in place, you've identified your scope, then you really start getting deep on your analysis, understanding all the memory requirements for SQL Server, what's it doing, how are the databases using things like the buffer pool, how much traffic's coming in, how much storage are you using, both from an IOPS capacity and from a raw footprint on disk. Is that something that it's grown into a terabyte system over 3 years, but now you're projecting that it's going to take a terabyte every year based around the way that you're inserting data into your platform at this point in time? Once you've done all the analysis and you understand what you've got to deal with and what you need to move forwards with, then it's time to do the proof of concept and the testing, building the systems up, getting them there, getting them in place, starting to do the migration, practice the migration ahead of time, don't leave it to the last minute. If you can get these systems in place and build them up, it'll make your life a whole lot easier. And again, if you do some actual testing on the new platform, that will help you identify if you've got any problems that you need to then go back and have a look at. After you've done your proof of concept, you've done your testing, then you look on to building the pre-production system and the live system. Get them ready to go. Essentially, my preferred methodology is to build the system, do a lot of testing on it, commission it, and then migrate that system up into the production platform. That way you're confident that the hardware is good, you're confident the software configurations are good, and then have a pre-prod system there ready to go as well. And then the commissioning phase itself, understanding what you're going to be doing on the day. Plans, roll out, roll back plans. A lot of people forget those. Understanding that if something goes wrong halfway through the system, through the rollout, right? Okay, we need to perform these steps to roll back, because when you've got a CIO on your shoulder, it's not a nice experience being asked when's this going to be completed, and you can't give them an answer. Now, one of the really important things to understand here is that whilst everything's going from left to right on this diagram, we have got the option of going back. So you define your scoping, you do your initial analysis. If you find something really weird and interesting in there, you may have to go back and revise your scope. For example, okay, we missed all of our replication stuff that was downstream. Again, from the planning, that can go back and look at the initial analysis. You look at, okay, the development department have said that these deprecated features are things that we can't use anymore. Well, we've got to use these. We've got nothing for 6 months. What's that going to have? What impact that's going to have on your initial analysis? Go back, look at things again. Is there a workaround that you can make use of? Planning can also send you back to scoping as well. If they say, right, okay, we can't change the client library, okay, what have we got elsewhere that we're going to have an impact on this? In-depth analysis will feed back into planning as well, as the developers make changes potentially in the dev test systems, understanding what we've got that could change your plans. We thought it was going to take 30 days to do this. In reality, it's going to take 15. It'll give us some extra slack. Or conversely, it's going to take us 45. So that's going to push things further out. Go back and look at things. And again, proof of concept and testing. Once you've got that up and running, it could throw a complete curveball at you. That could send you back to replan again. Now, the big constant here is testing throughout the whole side of things. Don't just leave it to the last minute, and don't just sort of pay a lip service. You really want to get involved with this, and it's not only from the IT side of things, you also want the business helping you out here. They understand their applications. And then finally, the thing we all love, documentation. Documentation runs all the way through. What tests have you done? What results did you get? Why did you make the decisions you're making? Who's going to be saying that you can or cannot migrate on the day? Who's going to tell you you need to enact the rollback plan? All of this needs to be understood and documented. So, now we've gone through the process side of things, let's have a look at some of the free tools that we happen to have. Now, we have got a massive amount of free tools available, both from our main download pages, but also from CodePlex, where our own engineers have published things. So, performance analysis of logs, the PAL tool, SQL Nexus. These are all things we use internally, but we've put them out there on CodePlex for you to use as well. So, as I said, we've got large numbers of tools. There's two main areas for the tooling that we want to look at here. You want to understand the analysis side of things, so what's there at the moment, how do you data gathering of your existing environment. And then we want to look at how to benchmark and really push the new system to make sure and be confident that it's going to meet our needs over the projected lifespan of the system. Understanding when to use the right tool and what the right tool is going to be very, very important because there are so many available. So, free tools, we've got 10 of them here. So we're looking at SQL Trace, which is built into the product. Okay, it's deprecated for replacement by extended events in 2012 and 2014. But if you're back on SQL Server 2005, SQL Trace is really one of your best ways of getting in there and understanding what the system's doing. RML Utilities, this is a suite of tools that you can use for analyzing trace files, but also for load testing a system as well through things like OSTRES and Orca. Distributed Replay, again, will do workload replay. Really, really makes life a lot easier to if you can capture your production workload and push that back onto the new platform. SQL Nexus to find out just what's going on internally, the real sort of guts of SQL Server. Performance analysis of logs that I mentioned. Now this is, it helps you set up Perfmon to really capture the data you need. Best Practice Analyzer, Database Upgrade Advisor. These are sort of tools that will make your life a little bit easier to try and help flag things with the SQL Server configurations, the operating system configurations and such like. If you can get those, understand what changes you're likely to need to make. Then Map Toolkit, this is a very, very wonderful little tool. Not many people know about it, but it allows you to do a wide scale analysis of your environment so you can target all your web servers, all your app servers, all your SQL servers, everything that goes into making up your system, you can target as one unit. You understand all the operating system versions, you can get all the software versions, you can even do performance analysis over a prolonged period of time. So you can set it up to do a performance gathering exercise for 2, 3, 7 days, makes life a lot easier. So you can capture those events that happen within the business. PSS Diag Manager, this is a free tool on Codeplex as well, which we'll cover. It basically works with SQL Nexus to help you gather a snapshot of Perfmon operating system environment as well as the SQL Server environment as well. And then we've got our DMVs that are built into SQL Server, and these can really surface a lot of the internal information to make your life a lot easier, capturing which hosts are connecting to which databases and which servers and so on and so forth. Again, can help you when you're doing a scope establishment.
Before we move on, John, I was wondering if you could step back through this list and tell us which ones are standalone downloads that we'd want to go to the Microsoft Download Center for and which ones we might look to places like Codeplex for.
Okay. Well, SQL Trace is built into SQL Server. RML Utilities is in our downloads website. Distributed Replay ships with the product. SQL Nexus, Performance Analysis of Logs, and PSS Diag Manager are all from Codeplex. And the SQL Nexus and PSS Diag Manager are linked together, so you can get when you find one, you'll find the other.
Great.
And obviously, the Best Practice Analyzer and the Upgrade Advisors. We've got the various different versions on the download and also the ship of the product. So we have a wide variety of things there, but they're all free, which is really, really useful.
Fantastic. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that everyone knew where to find these great tools.
No, that's fine. So we start looking at some of the useful tools that I use now. A very little known tool that I use a lot is Relog. Now, what this does is you capture your Perfmon binary log file and you want to get the data out of it. You want to put it in Excel. You want to try and put it into a database. You want to be able to generate some form of graphical representation of the metrics you've captured so you can justify what you're saying. Can't do that with native binary log files, but using Relog, you can decompose those files down into CSV files that you can then pull into Excel, that sort of thing. Log Parser, another very, very useful little tool. Log Parser is from the download site as well. Just means that you can do a lot with it. It's almost like a SQL-esque syntax for querying things like CSVs. You join them together, you can process a lot of them. You can just put up little graphs, you can put up grids and stuff like that. Makes life a lot easier.
Query your own data.
Exactly. And then there's Excel, which is everybody's favorite presentation medium. You want to put graphs together, you want to put something visual together to give to the management to help justify your case. Excel's the tool that everybody uses. So what we'll do now is we'll look at jumping into a quick demo here about how to use Relog. So here we go. We've got a demo here. We're going to look at Relog. Now, what I've done here is I have already got my Perfmon binary log file. I've gone in, I've captured a whole pile of counters that I want for SQL Server 2008. And what we can look at doing here is we can use relog. As you can see here, what I've done is out to PowerShell. We can actually go in and we can ask it to tell us what are all the counters that we've captured. Okay, so we go in, we capture all of these counters. Which ones do we want to pull out? So what you can do there is I've just put that one to the screen. What we can do is if we do this, what we can do now is actually drop that out to a file, which makes life a whole lot easier for us. So bear with me 1 second whilst I grab that.
So what counters are we looking for? What are some of the most important ones to be sure to capture?
We're covering it in a little bit more depth later on, but what we can look at here is essentially we will, as you can see, sorry, put them all in the file here. But what we're looking at really is to make use of something like PAL, where we've got templates. I mean, we want to capture our memory, we want to capture our CPU utilization, we want to capture our storage configuration, we want to understand the performance there, how many megabytes a second are we writing, how many we're reading, what are IOPS, information like that. And then you want to drill into some of the SQL Server counters as well. We're looking at things like the buffer manager, so page life expectancy, things like that. So there's a large, large number there. Now, what we can do with relog as well, if we look at here, is you specify your binary log file. This is your input file, effectively. And I will just set that up properly. We set up a counter file. Now, this is effectively a filter. So which ones do I want to filter out and put into my new file? And I want to put them out into a CSV. Okay. So, and we specify the format. We can have comma separated, tab separated, we put our binary file. We can actually load it directly to SQL as well. Although my preference is always to drop it down to a CSV. It just gives me that versatility that I can then load it to SQL or I can do pull straight into Excel. Okay, so if I look at these, what I've got here is just a simple filter file. If we open this up, now, as you can see here, I'm using wildcards. We've got the asterisk there, which means that you can generally, you can create these general filter files that you can apply to any capture that you take. You don't have to specifically put in the server name or the machine name and the counter name and then you want it for buffer node 1 and the buffer node 0 and the buffer node 2, stuff like that. You can put the wildcards in and it will pull all of that information out for you. So that's how we look at building our filter. So this is a very, very basic filter one here. We're looking at the buffer node and the buffer manager, looking at page life expectancy, which is one of the key counters a lot of DBAs use. So if we highlight that lot, okay. It's a very small file. We've got 43 samples, but what it does, it shows you when the data capture was taken from and the file it was pulled in from as well. So here we go. We have this file here. So if I open this with Excel, let's see if it's gonna. So as you can see, we've got Excel here. So I'll just remove these three rows for a second. But what we can do then is just take that. We will insert just a very basic line chart there. So you can see I've gone straight from Perfmon counters and now I'll be able to put a graph together. This one just shows that my PLE is growing all the time, which is a good thing in this case, but this is just sample data. But it's that easy to grab the data out of a format that Excel can't read, put it into a format it can, and do that. And it's all scriptable as well, as you can see there. I was using the PowerShell ISE in order to drive that one there, so you can parameterize it. So if you've got a large number of files, you can use things like a for each loop in PowerShell, just loop through all your filter files and generate your CSV outputs. So there's a large amount of things that you can do there.
Yeah, and it's a great looking chart and something, as you mentioned, that you could really use to present to management.
Yep. No, it makes life a whole lot easier if you can give them that visual cue. They don't want large numbers of figures. They just want to see graphs that tell them, what do I need to know? Why? What can I take up the chain so I can justify spending the money on this upgrade? Okay. Yep. So we'll go back to our presentation. So other tools we've got as well. Map Toolkit Microsoft Assessment Planning Toolkit, it's a solution accelerator. It makes life a lot easier for you. This is the thing where you can really go out and discover what's on your network. All of the software versions, the client driver versions, the .NET versions, everything that's going to be key for you to understand what you need. You can also get it to go and audit SQL Server as well. Which versions, build versions. You can get it to drill in and pull out information about the databases, the size of the databases, the collations, all of the key information that you're going to need to understand when it comes to making the decision how you're going to set your new servers up. Okay. As I said, very good for discovery and data capture. You can get it to go out and pull in Perfmon Counter, and it's designed to do it over a period of time, say up to a week or so. So you can just kick it off on the machine that's capturing the data, forget about it for a week, it will automatically shut itself down based around the date parameters you give it. We've got a demo later on in this session as well where we'll have a look at it.
Yeah, the environment topography sounds especially interesting. Mm. We know that a number of the SQL Server 2005 and earlier databases that are out there are on a server under somebody's desk or have been spun up by a rogue person in various departments, and we just don't even know about them or have forgotten about them in the meantime.
Exactly, and that's where understanding and helping scope the objective, this is something that can really help you with that tool. And it's also got a number of wizards built into it for consolidation. If you want to virtualize your platform, if you want to take a large number of physical servers and consolidate them down, we've got some information based, we've got some wizards in there that will base that on the information that you have captured from the performance metrics there. And likewise, if you're looking to go up to Azure, It's got a number of processed reports in there that will tell you what can go, and where things can't go, it will identify what those issues are to help you remediate them. So it can aid you that much. It can aid your move to the cloud. We've got the Database Upgrade Advisor. It's used to identify issues that need to be resolved prior to upgrading. Really, what you do is you take the version that you're going to and run that against the source version. Now, the SQL Server 2014 Upgrade Advisor is being enhanced at the moment. I believe sort of towards the end of the year it might be in a position where it's going to give you full information about the SQL Server 2000 environment, source environment, when you want to go to SQL Server 2012.
Yeah, actually my understanding is that those enhancements are underway, and probably by the time people watch this MVA training, there will be full support for SQL Server 2005 in the SQL Server 2014 Upgrade Advisor.
Mm-hmm. That's really, really good. It's going to make life a lot easier. I've got a couple of big migration projects coming up myself that I'm going to be making good use of this product on. The Best Practices Advisor, again, it's understanding best practices, what are out there. It does require PowerShell remoting to be enabled, which can be a bit of a blocker for some environments, but it can make life a lot easier. You've got to weigh up the benefits of the tool versus making these changes. The best practices, we've got a couple of KB articles as well that we've recently published. We've got one specifically related, we've got identified here in the slide, about how to set up high-performance systems and a number of things like trace flags and configuration options. You might want to look at setting when you do it. So taking the best practice analyzer and using it with other documentation that we provide will make life a lot easier when you come to plan what you need to make use of. Okay. Now, the big thing to remember about best practices, they're general. The best practice might not always apply for your environment. Every environment is unique, so understand what they are before you look to blindly apply them. If something it just doesn't fit well in your environment, then don't apply it. Your environment and the functioning of it is what's key, so understanding that information and taking that into your planning phase as well. A couple of other quick tools as well we look at here is we've got PAL, which is a free one up on Codeplex, really, really useful. Can capture it can help you build your Perfmon captures, and then it can also do analysis of them. Okay, and can be automated with things like PowerShell, makes life a lot easier there. It's essentially scripting. Then we've got SQL Trace again built into the product. Very, very good. Now, one of the key things here is it allows you to do workload replay, which means you can capture from your production system if you can handle the overhead of trace, and then you can process it and then you can replay it using either the RML utilities or distributed replay. There's specific events that you need to look at capturing, but once you've got them, it can make your life a lot easier because then you can take a like-for-like workload and apply it to your new system. And that way you can see how it works under those environments. And it's a tried and tested tool set.
So I have a quick question about that. How do people usually balance the overhead generated by trace with the need to capture during a production hours?
It really does depend. It depends on how important it is. The more restricted you can make the trace, the less impact it will have, but sometimes it's just not an option. So if you've got the overhead and you can take it, I'd recommend it. It makes life a lot easier in the long run, but if it's going to put an overhead on your system that's going to cause your production environment a problem, you really need to think hard about whether or not you need to do that. Okay. And then we look at our dynamic management views and functions as well that come with SQL Server. These are the things that will give you a good sort of insight into just what SQL Server is doing. Introduced with SQL Server 2005 and then enhanced all the way through the product up to the current day. One of the good things to look at here is buffer pool composition. Which database is consuming how much of the buffer pool, and track that over time. So capture it every sort of minute or so to understand the changes so through the day. So if something that gets used heavily in the morning, not in the afternoon, you can see how that buffer pool composition will change over time, and then you can work that into your plan. So if you're looking to do a consolidation exercise, understanding that you're not going to put everything in one server that runs between 8 in the morning and 10 in the morning, put them all together and then you could be in a bit of a trouble. You want to look at things, if they've got different usage patterns, how will they sit together? And can be very, very low impact. Some of them are just sort of looking at the SQL OS, pulling information out, makes life a lot easier. But some of them, like some of the index fragmentation ones, if you run them with a detailed analysis, can be quite heavyweight when they trawl through the database. So just bear that in mind when you look at understanding which scripts you need to use. Now, when it comes to DMV scripts, this is where the community can really, really help us out. Glenn Berry from SQL Skills has got a wealth of scripts out there that he publishes up on SQL Skills blog site for free. One of my first stops when it comes to these. There's no point in reinventing the wheel. He's done a lot of work in this regards, and they are fantastic scripts. So that's something I suggest having a look at and really sort of making use of community resources out there rather than having to rewrite your own all the time. And then we look at two tools that we can use for testing the new environment. And this is SQLio and SQLio Sim. SQLio is a benchmarking tool. This will tell you what your IO subsystem is capable of giving you. Depending on the configurations we look at, and we've got a demo again of this later on, and what this does is you can stress the system. You can say, I want to perform random 8K IOs with this many outstanding on this many threads, and just go. And you can really see what you can get out of the platform. So when you're hitting disk, you can understand, you can be confident that it will work for you and it will give you the performance you need.
Great, so some tools here for performance testing and stress testing the new environment and making sure that it's really going to give you the performance you need.
Exactly. I wouldn't run SQLio on a production system. It can cause severe problems in that regard because of the amount of IO it can generate. Like I say, it's a benchmarking tool. It's something you should look to run up front and use that as a baseline so that when you're doing your baseline monitoring through the lifetime of your product, through the lifetime of your system, you can understand the performance that you have there and where it sits with the capabilities of your storage system, so you can see if you're getting close to the limits or not. SQLio Sim, again, it's a kind of benchmarking tool, but it does simulate SQL Server IO patterns. So it can give you a representation of a SQL Server load. If you can't do workload testing, this is probably the next best thing to look at.
And did we talk about where these two tools are available?
These are both available from our download site.
Oh, great.
Okay. So in summary, what we're looking at here is defining what needs to be done, defining the scope. And this is a really, really key thing. You want to also define your success criteria. You want to establish what the process is, how you intend to achieve it, and how you intend to actually say, yes, we did achieve what we set out to achieve, the success criteria there. Communication as well, working with a business is always better than not. One environment I saw a migration go into, the guys shut it down on the Saturday, they did the migration, they did the upgrade, they brought it back online. The problem was that was a month end and finance were in that weekend and they couldn't gain access to the system. So they end up pushing that back. So by not communicating with the business, they had a major business impact there. Again, it's something I can't stress enough. Communication is key in this sort of environment. And question yourself. Don't be afraid to go back and look at things and change plans. It's not worth plowing on and just dealing with it. It's like, oh, well, we'll overcome this, we'll overcome this and overcome this. If you're hitting lots of blockers, step back, think about it, understand what's going to be going on.
Great.
Again, final things, use the right tools. We looked at the analysis tools there. We looked at the benchmarking tools, know when to deployment, which ones are going to be appropriate for you and when you're going to be using them. Repeatability, again, very, very important. Automate where you can. you don't want to have to sit there, you don't want to have to kick these scripts off yourself. If you've got a situation where you're going to be making incremental changes to the platform before you go live, you want to be able to be confident and say, right, we've made a change, run the tests, get the input, get the output back to them. And then capture a wide variety of workload that takes place on the server. This is one of the key things that we want to look at here, is understanding which workload data. Yep, you've got month ends, you've got weeks, you've got overnight processing, and don't forget your maintenance as well. Understanding how much load CheckDB is going to put on your system, how much your re-indexing is going to put on your system as well, that's all stuff that's going to affect the overall performance and impact of your system. So, right, that's the end of module one. So, I think we covered quite a lot there.
We did, yes. Thanks, John. Thank you for joining us for Module 1 of Upgrading to SQL Server 2014. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to join us for the next module, we're going to talk about how you can take some of the performance metrics that we have gathered about your current production environment and apply them to planning and scaling your upgraded environment. So we look forward to seeing you then.
Cool. Thank you.